Can the folks online hear us okay?
What should we mute online?
The host would like you to unmute your microphone. You can press star six to unmute. You are unmuted.
Good morning, it's 11:30 on March 10th and we're gonna call our meeting to order. Can all the folks online hear us now? Is there anyone online?
We have Dan and Brad and Jeremy online.
Okay, wonderful. Any thumbs up?
We can hear you, Lindy.
Thank you, Dan, I appreciate it. Okay, let's do our commissioner roll call. It looks like Commissioner Meyer is here, Commissioner West, Commissioner Davis, Commissioner Kennedy, Commissioner Feinman, and myself. Is Quint planning to join us today?
He will be.
Okay, perfect. All right, we have forum. And our staff here today, Victoria, would you mind introducing folks?
We have CEO Angela Padalecki, Director of Facilities and Tech, Director of Operations Bill Heatherline, Director of Admin and Finance Sarah Mingy, myself Victoria Heisteller, Terminal Ops Manager Cameron Reese, Finance Specialist Travis Portner, Finance Manager Jennifer Croker.
Wonderful. And then we have a few folks online. And then we have our legal counsel, Dan Reimer, who else is online with us, too.
We have Brad Rolfe and Jeremy Lee from Legal.
Okay, wonderful. Thanks for joining us, guys. Let's dive into our Pledge of Allegiance before we move our agenda.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, now we have our approval of the agenda. Team, do we have any changes to the agenda or commissioner? Okay, wonderful. May I get a motion to approve the agenda, please?
Motion to approve.
Thank you, Commissioner
Second.
Freeman. Thank you, Cody. All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Wonderful. The motion carries. Commissioner comments. Do any of our fellow commissioners want to share anything or comments? Okay. As you all know, I always have one thing or another. But today I am really excited to recognize Victoria Heisteller. I was told it was a surprise. So she just became a Society for Human Resource Management certified professional. It's a big deal. I spent with hours and hours staying above the rest of that certification. So congrats you. Yeah, thank you for working hard to help us always just be right above par and be knowledgeable. That stuff is incredibly complicated. So congrats.
Thank you.
You're most welcome. I did love that phrase.
Here's your copy now. Oh, thank you.
Did you need a copy of the agenda? Do we have any citizen comments today?
No.
Wonderful. So our consent agenda. We have approval of our meeting minutes and our sixth addendum to the purchase operating agreement. May I get a motion to approve that consent agenda?
Move to approve the consent agenda.
Thank you, Cody Kennedy.
Second.
Thank you, Commissioner West. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Wonderful. Consent carries. So we have a handful of things on our action item today. All of them are roll call votes because they're all resolutions. The first item is approval of our rates and charges. Sarah, are you presenting on that today?
Yeah, I think this whole meeting is mine, actually.
Okay.
Mine is staff report. So within the rates and charges, we did a much more robust update for the effective January 1st date. The two changes that you see before you are to the airside lease stated rate and the rental car service area. The airside leases, all of the individual ground leases have specific contract terms that include a CPI increase annually. This stated rate within rates and charges, what that represents is if someone new wants to come and set a new lease, we are leasing at the highest rate that exists in all of our other leases today. So this is really just to recognize that CPI adjustment. We do have some leases that are biennial, some that are annual. The annual rate was about 2.7. The two-year CPI was about 5.3%. So that's the reflected number on that airside lease rate. And then the rental car service area is a little bit unique. So within those concession agreements, again, it provides for an annual CPI adjustment, but it doesn't have any stated rates, and it says as stated in the rates and charges. So this is just to reflect what that new rate is with that CPI increase. The actual rate on that one is not quite the CPI number just because of the rounding to the nearest penny instead of four digits, as you can see in the other ones. But those are the only two changes that we're presenting for this set of rates and charges today.
Commissioner, questions?
A commissioner had raised a question just in looking at the rates and charges document about how we charge for our airfields and how we charge users. So I appreciate that and wanted to just touch on that really briefly, if that's okay. So in our airfield, we charge either a landing fee, and that's per 1,000 pounds landing weight, or a fuel flowage fee. So for commercial airlines, they pay landing fees. That's per 1,000 pounds of landing weight. That is self-reported by the airlines, and then we cross-check that with actual published schedules to ensure that it's similar. You know, there's cancellations and different things that happen, so rarely are they identical, but just to as a control. And obviously those are customers of ours that we bill already for rent and other things. And so that works really well. And we don't want to disincentivize them from getting fuel here either. And so, you know, fuel, they still pay a fuel tax because that's a state fuel tax, but a landing fee is industry standard to charge airlines, and then we don't charge them a fuel flowage fee because we account for their cost and landing fee. On the other side, you have general aviation, which is everyone except commercial airlines, you know, as defined by the FAA. So those are two mutually exclusive and exhaustive groups. So GA represents most of the activity at the airport. You know, we have about 150 operations per day, takeoff and landings, and, you know, commercial service doesn't even represent a third of those. So, you know, three quarters or so are general aviation, and they pay for their usage of the airfield through fuel flowage fees. So they pay a fee on the fuel that is pumped on airfield. So that fee is 20 cents per gallon for everyone except the military. The board recently implemented, and I think everyone here was on the board when that change was made, a reduced fuel flowage fee for military, which is 18 cents. You know, there are a lot of airports in the area, and especially this time of year, there's kind of more focus on how much they charge for general aviation. A lot of the resort airports charge a landing fee for general aviation in addition to just commercial. We do not charge that, and it was several years ago, actually, that we kind of came to a decision point if we were going to start charging a landing fee. That would have been the point where it made sense. Historically, the airport has charged a 10-cent fuel flowage fee, 10 cents per gallon. You know, 20 years ago in the 2000s, some improvements were made that jointly benefited Westar and the airport, and so there was a contract between the two that showed that Westar would pay back their portion and they would collect an extra 10 cent fuel flowage fee until those improvements were basically paid off. I mean, the airport financed them, but that way we had a direct revenue stream to pay for those. The airport staff tracked that, and a couple of years ago we actually met that threshold where we paid off those improvements, and staff recommended to the board, based on benchmarking other airports, that we felt it was most appropriate to keep the fuel flowage fee at the 20 cent rate, given all the improvements we're making out in the airfield. That puts us at a higher level than a lot of other airports for fuel flowage fees. But to do that in lieu of implementing a landing fee, because administratively, landing fees are a lot of work to collect also from general aviation. You just think about the number of customers who are filling the airlines versus all of the general aviation activities. And so I can't remember which year it was, but in the last few years, I think before most of the board members here were on the board, that change was made. And so, you know, since we came to you with this rates and charges resolution, mm-hmm. everyone's looking at the rates and charges document again, I know different questions pop up, and just wanted to cover that and recognize that question.
Yeah, I think that's important. History, I think I was the only one serving on the board at the time that we...
I guess.
Were you? Okay, thank you. I was trying to remember who else was on the board at the time. Any other questions? Thank you for that.
Yeah, I'll just,
thank you for that clarification, because when looking at just the land fee as an island, it seemed odd that we were so lucky that we didn't have one. But when you consideration the fuel flowage, that really they helped me understand why we are where we are.
Yeah. And I mean, it just depends what type of behavior you're trying to incentivize. Like fuel flowage fees and landing fees are used in that way. You know, in the resort communities, you know, they have different objectives than we do when it comes to their air service, both GA and commercial. And so I think those high landing fees, because they are really high, not only do they charge a landing fee, but it's a high landing fee. I think it can make sense in resort communities. That's what we found in our benchmarks too, is there's airports in really nice areas of California and Florida that do something similar, but for us, and given like just the broad diversity we see in our general aviation community, we felt like this is the ecosystem is kind of set up to where they pay fuel flowage fees and not landing fees, and it felt appropriate to leave it there. Furthermore, when we you know incorporated that in our financial plan, we felt like that was a sustainable path too.
For landing fees, how is it calculated for like flight school? Is it every touching that we do is landing fee?
I think so, usually.
So for an airport with a flight school, you wouldn't want to go with landing fees?
And you could always carve them out. I mean, so that's where there's, you can't discriminate, for the FAA, you can't discriminate against similarly situated entities. So if you said, you know, landing fee or flight schools, all flight schools will be omitted from this, right? I think that would be allowed. Or flight schools will pay, you know, one landing fee per flight. I don't know how to describe it.
Typically be like an itinerary operation,
yes,
where it's just they are done. A touch and go typically wouldn't see the landing fee associated with that.
But you'd have to carve that out separately. You'd have to make sure that you're applying uniformly against all flight schools, but as long as it's, you know, again, it's that similarly situated word that really matters in the discrimination, kind of the obligations to have to not discriminate within the airport. But just overall for us, this is a system that's worked and that we look at and continue to see our fuel flowage fees growing, and we're able to cover our costs, and it feels like a fair share given those costs.
What does GA mean? Landing fee versus the tax, because I know when we did this a couple years ago, we got some feedback that tax was way too high. I don't remember the justification behind it all. I don't remember what you just said, but does GA prefer a landing fee or do they prefer fuel flowage?
They prefer no fee. But I think it just depends. So you know, if you have a really small aircraft. I think it really depends on kind of how you use your aircraft, what type of aircraft you have, and what your plans are. So, you know, for a tenant, maybe not even a tenant, but for a user where they're going to go and get fuel at a cheaper airport and then come here and do stuff here, and they would prefer we not charge a landing fee because right now they're kind of able to not pay much when they're here. But I think it depends. When I look at someone like Westar, and the MRO operation, landing fees are really hard on MROs because they're going to pay a lot more landings. Now, you can carve them out separately, but given the scale of their operation, I think that could ruffle feathers within our general aviation community, because we wouldn't be collecting landing fees on a lot of our operations here. And so, and I think the airport has so much benefit, the community has so much benefit from having a commercial aviation business here that's diverse, that it could just be disruptive. Since we've spent this much time talking about landing fees and fuel flowage fees, I want to end with this, which will turn everything I've just said, you know, just flip it on its head. And that is, I want to remind commissioners that the Bureau of Land Management and Wildland Firefighting Base is different than what I just said. So as we evaluate their lease with them and kind of work through all their different colors of money and how they like to pay for things, they actually pay both a fuel flowage fee and a landing fee. So, and that's incorporated in all the pro formas we do when their lease has been extended and things like that. We're trying to account for like their, you know, the big prepayments they'll make on their rent and all of that. So we just use averages of their activity levels, but that one is different. So when you look out, it's not every aircraft is only paying one. That is true with everyone except the firefighting operations. they're paying less.
And our rates and charges policy accommodates contracts superior to that? Like, do we have in here that says unless otherwise contracted with a tenant?
We don't have anything in there, but Dan hasn't felt like there was a need for it. Okay. Online.
Okay.
And so, but I think, Dan, I'll let you weigh in, but the way we look at things is anytime we have a signed contract from two parties, you know, if there's a conflict, that one's going to rule.
Got it. That's fine.
Dan, did you
correct? No, that's exactly right. I mean, normally the contracted rates would control over the rates and charges schedule.
Thank you.
Any other questions? The background is really helpful. I think it's okay to be reminded of that every year.
Yeah, any time. I mean,
thank you. All right, I'm going to, if there are no other questions, I'm going to take a motion, but I do need the commissioner who gets this motion to read the resolution, please.
I move to adopt resolution number 2026-02, amending rates and charges effective April 1st, 2026, to reflect the changes in lease rates based on contractual CPI adjustments.
Thank you, Commissioner Freeman. Can I have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Commissioner Meyer. I will now do roll call. Commissioner Meyer?
Yes.
Commissioner West?
Yes.
Commissioner Freeman?
Yes.
Commissioner Kennedy?
Yes.
Commissioner Davis?
Yes.
And the chair votes in approval as well. The motion carries. All right. I always love this one. So our resolution now is the CDOT internship grant. This is such a fun program, and I know it's a roll call vote, but it's also a great reminder that we get to have this because of CDOT. So.
Yeah, CDOT, I wish I knew how long they have been offering this, and I would have had that included, but we've done this for several years. They offer an internship grant to basically further education and aviation and just participation. It is an annual grant. They will pay up to half of the base wage rate for an intern, up to, I think it's $20 now, it's 2018. So we have applied for to be able to have up to two interns. Dylan currently has one right now, and then we've been talking about posting for another one and trying to work through what that second role looks like. But we've had, you know, a lot of success with this. We've had quite a few in the business and administrative office helping, you know, to do board meetings with sort of the aviation management. And then Phil's been able to use them in operations these past couple of years as well, just to create and generate interest. So this is the formal acceptance of this for this next cycle, and just a continuation of the program that we currently have. And I don't know, Dylan or Jennifer Angel, if anybody else wants to add anything.
I think it's been in place for at least the early 2000s, if not late 90s. I myself am a product of this program, so I back it 100%. So
that's really cool.
It's a great program.
Centennial Airport has a nationally recognized internship program, you know, that really stemmed from the CDOT program, and CDOT funds it. But it is remarkable how many people in aviation worked as interns at Centennial Airport. Mm-hmm. I mean, airlines, airports, I mean, there are countless jokes. And actually, a woman named Lori, who Dylan used to work for at Centennial, she is the one who really started that internship program and has really just fostered it. It's been her baby, and she's getting ready to retire and actually move to Grand Junction because her son lives here. And so we might even talk Lori into coming in sometime and meeting the board. But yeah, it's a program that's worked very well, and it's fun and keeps all of us young.
Commissioner, any questions?
Brief comment. Very much appreciate that we participate in this program, and I very much appreciate that it's a paid internship program, which, coming from the 1900s, when I was doing that kind of stuff, there were a lot of unpaid internships, and I think it's really important to pay people to do the work. So thank you for that, and thank you for the state of Colorado making that a paid internship.
If I may, too, Todd Green, who is a large part of this with CDOT, he's really pumped our tires, so to speak, as an airport. We provide 139 experience, which can be kind of worth its weight in gold to those that are trying to get their foot in the airport management. And if we're not the only, we're one of the only airports that offer airport operations curriculum within the 139, so they get that 139 experience, which we're really proud of.
Okay. Part 139 is that commercial operating certificate.
Sorry.
No, it's okay.
Go into my
regulation. So it's so airplane. So it just, that means that you're allowed to have commercial air service according to the FAA. It's just a different set of standards, whereas like Centennial is not required to meet Part 139 standards. They choose to, and they opt to, because they think it's best practice, but they're not required.
Thank you. Again, another roll call vote. May I get a motion read in full to approve Resolution 2026-03?
Move to approve Resolution Number 2026-003 to accept the grant from the Division of Aeronautics for internship positions at the airport and authorize the Chief Executive Officer to sign the related agreements.
Thank you, Commissioner Kennedy. A second?
Second.
Thank you, Commissioner Davis. All those in favor? Oops. That's really what I want to do. We all want to do
right,
it.
Yeah.
Commissioner Davis?
Yes.
Commissioner Kennedy?
Yes.
Commissioner Kleinman?
Yes.
Commissioner West?
Yes.
Commissioner Meyer?
Yes.
And then the chair votes in approval as well. The motion carries. Thank you, guys. Excited to see that continue. Next on our agenda is resolution for our CIB bank application. So take it away.
Absolutely. As many of you may remember from last year, we came to this group and applied for Colorado State Infrastructure Bank loan for $6.5 million to help fund the parking lot expansion for the public parking, as well as part of that solar covered program in our parking lot. And I did put together just sort of this list of projects just for reference here. But when we applied for that money, the State Infrastructure Bank Loan Program is a fund that has up to a certain dollar amount, but then as it is taken, it then gets replenished with those repayments. So it is a little bit hard to fund really large projects in here. It's something where there's some smaller amounts of money available each year, and the state has indicated that they are very supportive of us applying for these as we go for projects to fund. So one of the other things that's been really unique as we talk about this landside parking and roadways is the aviation program. They have a smaller pot of money that they're able to loan out, but they have been able to, with our projects, because they are roadway and parking focused, to borrow actually from the Highway Infrastructure Fund, which has a little bit more money available. So as we presented in this last meeting, we have all of this kind of landside planning and improvement that we have on deck. And the State Infrastructure Bank Loan Program has a really favorable interest rate at 3.5%. There's no arbitrage provision, so we actually are earning 3.79 right now. So this free money that just sounds really great. It does have a 10-year repayment program. It's subordinate to our bond. Angela and I have confirmed with bond counsel that none of this goes into that debt service coverage ratio, but we do have some projections for that and feel that it's really healthy still with what we have. So in our conversations with talking with the state, they have about $5.5 million available. And as we kind of looked at just projects, we have up there the parking expansion that we did complete came to about $2.9 with all of the soft costs and everything included. That covered parking with solar, as well as some of the landscaping around it, is just over $7 million. So those two alone are in excess of what we were able to apply for last year. We also know we want to update and replace that parking revenue control equipment. That $1 million is an estimate at this point, just talking with our planners. Bus stop relocation, not just the relocation and build out of the new, but also reconfiguration of the existing and kind of that curbside improvement for that commercial activity. Again, the estimates of our engineers, as well as design for that next phase of parking expansion. As we've been talking about the Aspen closure and filling up our already new expansion lot at Thanksgiving, we also know that future expansion is imminent. Maybe a little bit of an overbuild for our current operations, but we want to be able to, have that ready and on deck. So these are just kind of that list of projects that are in this kind of immediate year that we've looked at, have budgeted for, discussed with the group. So when we kind of total all those together, that $12 million minus what we were able to get last year, that 6.5, it does come to just over 5.5. Certainly the parking lot build out is another $3 million-ish, just based on our current estimates of this last project. So we know we have more projects on deck, but this is just a really affordable way to fund those projects that are not grant eligible, I should say. And I think for the bankers and the finance people, and I'm sorry, this is a little smaller than I thought it was going to be, but Angela and I worked on just kind of a forecast. We just went out 5 years. I didn't go out for the full term. But with this, the debt service, which is that second to last line, it takes our total debt service to just over $3.4 million. The payment on this is about $683,000. And when we look at our total net operating income available for debt service that we're expected to generate in the next 5 years, we use really conservative assumptions of about a 4% increase in revenue each year, 5% increase in expenses, so an expense rate that's accelerating quicker than revenue to be conservative here. We also have that PSP revenue that's tied directly to our passengers. I actually dropped interest income, recognizing we will have to use some of our cash reserves as we pay for the remainder of the program. But when you take all of this into account, just this really preliminary estimate, our debt service coverage ratio, which is the number of times this net operating revenue can pay for your debt service, we can pay it 1.5 times, which is a really healthy number. 1.25 is what's in the debt covenant for the bond. The way our calculation works, actually all of the SIV loans get ignored, so it doesn't actually factor into the compliance of that. But outside of that, we want to make sure we can afford this. So this is allowing us to preserve cash. We'll continue to earn interest on this. As we know, we have several other expansion projects on deck that we're looking for funding for. So we think this is a great program and makes a lot of sense. So we're asking for your approval to apply for an additional $5.5 million SIV loan. And Ansel, I don't know if you have anything else to add.
I just think this program, it just allows us to maintain high liquidity, which is so important right now. You know, we have to float payments. Unfortunately, our partners with the FAA have been awesome, and our finance team does an incredible job submitting, you know, we pay contractors, we submit for reimbursement, we're getting reimbursed quickly. But, you know, if that were to slow down, you know, we could very quickly have a liquidity problem. So anything we can do to just maintain high levels of liquidity, I think helps us even just in this season where we have runway projects. But furthermore, and part of why we have so many of these numbers together right now that we can pull out these forecasts is, you know, Sarah has been working on a plan for us to finance and fund the terminal expansion that we have conceptual design for. And so, you know, as we look at that, when you're approaching potentially going to the bond market, and I mean, we are not yet going to the bond market, obviously, though you all will know every step of the way where we're going, but there's no softer pillow than cash today, right? Like, when you lend money for a living, at least somewhat, right? The time to ask for loans is when you have money in the bank, right? So having high cash balances helps too, and this debt is subordinate debt. And it just, there's no repayment penalty either. So if the interest rate environment changes and, you know, or any other circumstance changes to where we'd rather pay off our debt, we can do that with no penalty at all.
And the net operating income of the debt service includes new revenue streams from some of these projects that create additional parking revenue.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Which we really didn't factor in the high growth estimate in this, but exactly, this is funding that additional parking revenue by being able to differentiate. It's very quick fix.
Are there any specific reporting requirements or covenants that go with this?
There's not. It's a fairly simple, simplistic one. We have two payments a year, one that's just interest and one with principal and interest. So from our team, from an administrative, it's actually a relatively simple one as well. Great question.
And you intend to use the whole 10-year term? Maximum term?
As of right now, yes. Again, I think if we look at terminal expansion, I mean, even though we are preserving cash, just from those preliminary estimates of 40 to 50 million, it's likely we'll need some other kind of financing. This would be a great one based on what the terms are, but I would say there's a chance that we end up refinancing this when we go to fund those future projects, but no plans beside that to pay it off early. We would use this full 10 years.
And can you remind me where's liquidity stand today?
We have over $20 million of, I'm trying to think of what our total number is. I'm looking at Jennifer and Travis to cheat. I think we have about $22 million in unrestricted, and then we have another three in restricted is what I want to get off my head. And the way that this one works, too, is this will go into an escrow account. As we actually pay the contractor, we get it, draw it down, and then release it from escrow. It does earn a little bit of interest in there, but once we're able to actually do the drawdown, we move it into our Colorado Trust. That's where we're earning that higher interest rate than what we're owing on this one. And we also think just with the project, I mean, the fact that the expansion and then the solar are already underway, we anticipate to be able to draw these funds down fairly quickly and move them out of that escrow and that restricted account. We think it's realistic that we'd be able to move the entire amount out by the end of 2026.
And this program, as a reminder, because I think this is the third SIV loan that we've had, we have one in 2023, the 2025, and then this 2026 application. The resolution that approves the application basically approves the loan. So this is the first domino, but unlike most of the processes we have when it comes to our funding partners at CDOT or FAA, usually you all approve applying and then you approve some grant that's awarded, or, you know, in this case, the loan, but that's not how this works. So you approve, you authorize me to submit the application. We work with CDOT to get the application submitted. It actually goes to the Colorado Aeronautical Board. I sit on that board, but obviously refuse myself from matters like this. If there's funding to be transferred from the highway fund, it actually has to go to the Transportation Commission. That money gets transferred over, and then it has to go through the financial review through the state of Colorado too. So there's quite a few steps. This is the first step, and so I just wanted to point out that this is a really unusual process compared to what you typically see. But that's why we have to come to you first. Right now in our discussions with CDOT, we anticipate that if the loan is approved, the funds will be available around June.
Other questions?
I have a question. So the county participation type C pace in commercial property assessment and permit. And it basically, the county secures the note essentially. But then it's paid through property taxes, right? The airport pays property taxes.
We don't pay property taxes, but our tenants pay property taxes.
So I don't know how that would work, but it secures lower interest rates because the county's securing it, but it has to be clean energy improvements. So I didn't know if that was an opportunity in the future. It's a bit clunky because the airport's not actually paying the property tax.
Mm-hmm.
Just curious if that was a program that could work in the future if you're going to put more solar on. Bring
you
the solar program.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, that's one. Mm-hmm. I'll take that one down as a follow-up. Thank you, Cody.
Yeah, and I think we even have some good contacts for that because you guys were installing your vehicle charging stations. It looked like there may have been an opportunity for us, but unfortunately, we have to take it for our own. Unfortunately, wrong. It's great. But we'll reach out to those folks too. Like, it's all part of that same, you know, kind of family of programs, right, and funding programs.
Okay. Is there another comment or questions? I will take a motion to approve this resolution.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt resolution number 2026-004, directing the Chief Executive Officer to complete and submit an application for a Colorado State Infrastructure Bank loan in an amount not to exceed $5.5 million.
Thank you, Commissioner West. Second.
Okay.
Thank you, Commissioner Meyer. All right, roll call. Pull those names up. Commissioner Meyer?
Yes.
Commissioner West?
Yes.
Mr. Feynman?
Yes.
Commissioner Kennedy?
Yes.
Commissioner Davis?
Yes.
And the chair votes in approval as well. The motion carries. Thank you all. All right, staff report. The CEO is up.
Great. I'll start with the air service and I have a few other items to end with. Happy to report that passenger traffic is looking great. Is this what they're saying? It's not actually the top of the U.S. first. I don't know how to back up my head.
Mm-hmm. No.
Okay. So we measure TSA, you know, as you know, we measure traffic through the TSA checkpoint. It's not a one-for-one measure against passenger traffic because we screen some of our concession employees, for example. But it's a good year-over-year comparison, and TSA volumes have remained well above last year's numbers when we look. We have actual January passenger numbers that Sarah will report on, but we don't have February yet, and February looks very strong. March is looking like it will remain strong. Capacity looks phenomenal. We have record-breaking capacity. So while these numbers remain very high, you know, the throughput per scheduled seat is kind of a proxy for load factor. It's dipped just slightly. We expect that when we see huge capacity growth in our capacity. Both Q1 and Q2 is record-breaking capacity. It's the most scheduled seats we've ever had in either quarter. It's really exciting for Q1 because if those numbers hold, we'll finally break that record we set in 2020, which is crazy because 2020 we know was terrible actually with the pandemic, but the airlines had planned such significant growth at the airport. And so we're really excited because that's kind of the last milestone that we still wanted to hit. When it comes to those pre-pandemic numbers. Next slide. So American and Breeze right now are leading the growth. American, for those who fly American, I know there's some at this table who at least sometimes fly American. They're very happy because DFW and Phoenix are back to 3 daily flights. Now, during weekdays, during the weaker days of the week, use a different word, but I can't think of one right now. So Tuesdays and Saturdays in particular, this is across all network carriers, really at all stations. You're seeing them kind of fine-tune performance a little bit. So Tuesdays and Saturdays, sometimes we may only have 2 flights to those hubs, but most of the time we'll have 3 daily flights to those hubs from now until the foreseeable future. So we're really excited. United is up in the first quarter, only a little bit. They remain at 6 daily flights, and so just a little bit larger aircraft, but they start to go way up in the second quarter as they add that 7th daily flight. That 7th daily flight starts April 30th. So their growth for the rest of the year is looking strong. Right now, they plan to continue to fly 2 main lines and 5 regional jets. My guess is if loads are very high on those, eventually they will be updating to more main lines, but we're really excited about the extra frequency. You know, if they asked us which we'd prefer to add, you know, to upgauge a regional to a main line or to add a 7th flight, no brainer. We want 7th flight. Those time channel options are just so nice for passengers. So we're really excited. Also, I will say that doesn't necessarily just correspond to the uptick in demand that we see in our market. That really reflects an uptick at their hub in Denver and them adding an extra bank into their schedule. And so, you know, we'll see some of the flight times change a little bit because, again, our flight times correspond to their banking schedule. You fly in around the same time as everybody else so that you can stay in Denver or connect to a different flight. So Delta, their capacity was down in the first quarter because they shrunk to that once daily instead of the 1 to 2 times daily to reflect just that weaker demand in the winter. But they are back to their 12 weekly flights. And so we expect capacity to be flat for them as we move into spring. Okay. Here is, and I know this is a familiar slide, but I just think it's so nice to look at. So this is looking at March. So this is peak season if you're looking at the resort airports. And I wanted to point that out because typically, you know, we see a bigger gap between our airport and some of those resort airports than what we see this year during March. So we have an average of 14 daily departures and over 1,100 seats. This will be the first March that we have over 1,100 average scheduled seats. That's a huge number for us. Obviously, with a 30% increase in last year was a big year also. We contrast that with some of our neighbors. You see that Eagle is continuing to grow, and there are large aircraft that can go into Eagle. Montrose, on the other hand, their growth is smaller, and again, they have some larger aircraft going in there, so they actually have fewer daily departures on average, and their schedule tends to be very weekend-focused. Schedule. So during the week, they have far fewer departures than us, and then they have a few more on the weekends. But we're really happy to see that in March, we have more daily departures than they did. Because this is their peak season. Next slide. When we jump ahead to June, which is starting to get into our busy season, and obviously a weaker season for the resort airports, but it's outside of mud season. We don't like to look at April and May because that's such a weak valley. Mud season, we all know we live here. So June is, it really reflects that summer capacity that's loaded for those resort communities. So you see, we remain at almost 15 flights a day. Capacity is about the same as what you saw in March. And it's stronger, you know, another double-digit increase in capacity versus last year, which is record-breaking. And you look, and the only airport in the region that has more departures than us is Aspen. But I want to point out that seat-wise, we actually have pretty close to the same number of seats. And so again, those gaps are really shrinking. And June is the first full month too where every airport schedule will be open all month. So Aspen's preparing for their annual maintenance closure this year. It's 4 weeks long, so it'll start in April and finish in May. And so another reason those numbers would be wonky to look at. But our growth is very strong. Almost no matter how you look at it nationally compared to our neighbors, compared to system averages.
That's a dream, so. being the center?
It's a destination. So I think it's the main airport to access places like Mesa Verde, and then I think their tourism is just like growing a lot. So they have more, their passenger mix is more tourist versus business compared to us.
They're in the flight before. Canyonland looks like they're like 100% year over year. Can you explain that?
Yeah, so that's just because last year they only had service to Phoenix, and this year they also have service to Denver. So it's a huge percentage off a tiny number.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just curious what happened. And that was Moab for,
That was Moab. So that's Contour. Contour flies, Contour's a Part 135 carrier. So remember how we got to talk about Part 139? This is like Dylan's like dream board meeting. We're talking about all the different parts. So Part 135 is like commercial charter operating certificate. So like JSX, that's what Denver Air Connection used to fly on. So as you see, there's actually been a lot of attention on those kind of carriers because the network carriers, as those have grown, the network carriers have been critical of that. They also partner with those carriers. So in the case of Contour, they're now providing for the summer daily service to Denver to connect into the United Network. Phoenix, they connect to American. All right. Next, you probably noticed when you drive in that there's just like nonstop construction going on outside. Ben does, and he loves it. But these pictures are from this morning. So our team has been working very hard at just implementing as soon as possible water conservation projects on the airport with our landscaping. And so you are going to see a lot of the smaller areas of sod become rock. We don't intend to irrigate them this year. We intend to just basically turn those off and permanently move away from that as part of our water conservation efforts. So I just wanted to give kudos to Ben's team for being so on top of things. We don't have the irrigation water turned on yet, and they're already working to save the water that will come.
I'd like to say more than rock. This is irrigation.
Right now, we'll add
something to it so it's not just rock out there.
Well, and so you know, right now we are planning to leave a lot of it just rock because we're working on all these planning projects that could reconfigure things. And so I told the team, like, hey, especially like in our rental car lot and things, I think we're fine just leaving it nice looking rock for right now. And then once we're in our more permanent configurations again, then we can go through and landscape the new beds that we've created. So
I think the DJ looks sharp then.
I have just a few more items to cover that I don't have slides for. First, an item I should have covered last meeting. At the January board meeting for the Colorado Aeronautical Board, I was appointed the board chair. So I just want to make sure I let the board know. And sorry for not telling you last month, I should have. It's not my favorite thing to do is talk about me. So, but I think that I'm excited about that and shouldn't result in extra work or anything. A role I can play to help that board and help the airports in Colorado.
Yeah, we're grateful to have you representing our interests too on that board.
Thank you. Yeah, it's really fun. So I the seat I hold is a governor appointed board, and the seat I hold, I represent Western Colorado government is what that seat is for. So it allows me extra reasons to be involved and know about the projects in the area and things too, which I really like and affect our projects. So. That leads me to my next item, which is the paving is out to bid. Those bids are due on Thursday. So it is a big week at the airport. And I mainly wanted to bring that up because I wanted to recognize the incredible job that Jeremy has done leading those efforts. He has a great team backing him, but he himself is doing a phenomenal job along with Colin. We had an optional pre-bid meeting. It was very well attended. We're really hopeful that we will see high quality bids, and we hope several of them on Thursday. So we'll keep the board informed as we make progress. And certainly you'll see too when it comes before you as a contact. Next, our escalator. It is still closed, but Ben did ride it on Friday.
I did ride it.
Meaning it turned on.
It is working. So it's working. The maintenance guys contacted the state of Colorado to confirm that they could open it because it's overdue for inspection because it has to be working to inspect. And so they contacted them, left voicemails, no one got back to them. We thought we could leave it on. They were almost I-70 when they had to turn around and come turn it off and close it. So it does work, and we are hopeful it's going to continue to work when it gets inspected and then it gets turned off. So right now we are waiting for a state inspector to come out, and I don't think we have a date
Baby
yet.
Baby steps. I don't have a date.
But, you know, very, very soon.
Maybe the next board meeting we can all ride the escalator.
Well, actually, we were hoping it was going to, like, there was a chance it was going to open the day of the executive committee meeting, and so I told Ben, I'm like, well, don't open it until the executive committee meeting. We can have Chris and Lindy be the first writers. But if the handrail looks shiny, it's because it's new. And we intend to open the escalator before it gets dusty. So, really grateful.
But then, very excited to have the team
for getting this
yes, I will.
Work done. And then, last, I just had a note to thank Cody Kennedy for introducing us to the air race team. We are evaluating whether that might work at our airport, but so far, so good. If you have any questions on that, they're too technical for me to answer, so you'll have to talk to them.
Formerly the Red Bull.
Formerly the Red Bull Air Races. So we think it'd be a really neat opportunity for the community at the airport. I think it presents a very unique opportunity when it comes to the people that tend to attract. So more to come on that, but added as a note to thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Angela. Any follow-up questions for Angela before we move on to our finance report?
And the assignment's awesome.
Oh, yeah.
It does look awesome.
Good. I'm glad you guys love it. I loved it, but it looked different than it looked in the rendering. And I had to at least pull up the rendering on my phone in person to confirm I wasn't going crazy. But it was built to specification. So in case you had that same reaction, it looks even better than what I was expecting, frankly. But it looks slightly different.
It looks very good. Yes. Yeah. All right, Sarah.
I just had a couple quick slides for you. We do have those final January numbers, so our enslavements in January were up about 4% over budget. We'll continue our count here. It's the 37th straight month of year-over-year growth, if you will. So really excited to see those numbers. And we did have a fairly conservative budget this year. As you know, we had huge growth last year, but as you can see from capacity, we're really hopeful that we'll be able to blow it out of the water. When we look at operating revenue, one thing we did, partially because it's a little bit early, but Jennifer and Travis and I were talking, we get a lot of the contractor project invoices late, so that non-operating activity is always lagging behind. So we really just tried to kind of focus in a little bit more on operations, and as this was a little earlier meeting, we don't have all of those pieces yet. But what you'll see for January compared to budget, total revenues did exceed budget by 3%. The categories were behind. You see that almost 21,000 in non-passenger revenue. That again is our fuel flowage fees and the state fuel taxes, which again, very unpredictable just on the timing of the fuel flowage fees, whether or not we get a lot of military operations. We did take a little bit different approach when we were budgeting some of these streams this year. We really took a historical average of kind of seasonality, if you will, and tried to, first we came up with that annual number, and then we tried to estimate, you know, these months had the highest numbers of activity, and we tried to spread that out. We're still wrong, not concerned about it, but just that is kind of what is lagging behind. Non-aeronautical revenue from passengers, we were over our passenger budget by 4%, but you can see both parking and rental car well exceeded that 4%. So more spending on parking, more spending on rental cars, which was good to see. We've had a little bit of a lag in our rental car spend for passengers, so kind of nice to see that right size. And with those streams as well, we did try to adjust those seasonally. We've talked about that passenger, the type of passenger, the local passenger, versus the visitor does make a difference in those revenue streams. So really exciting to just see that. And then so far, again, just taking that guess on a lot of estimates on a monthly basis for our operating expenses for things like supplies and materials, repairs and maintenance. In total, we're under budget by 6% through January. So a good kickoff to the year. And I don't know if anyone had any questions.
One thing I will mention, because we talk so much about the fuel stuff, our fuel flowage fee is flat, 20 cents. The fuel tax is a percentage of revenues. And so that, I mean, that data, that revenue stream is really noisy because, you know, it's dependent both on volume and prices, and then the remittance schedule is inconsistent. And so when it comes to that revenue stream at the airport, it's just a noisy one. It's not my favorite one, I guess.
And that's really all I have for you guys today. And I'm looking hard on your enclosed stuff. So. All right.
So Jeremy, I think that you are covering for Colin. Is that correct today?
I am. I'm going to provide a little bit of a runway update here. So thank you very much for having me today. Sorry, I'm online, not in person. But definitely really appreciate all the support we received this last few months getting ready for this runway package bid. And Colin had prepared a bit of a breakdown to describe how the runway program is being broken up. And so this first slide sort of, it shows what we're constructing in this bid package. So the cyan, the light green blue color, is really us completing the new replacement runway along with connections to the runway at each end. That will facilitate us opening the new runway maintaining the existing runway operations, and then at the very end shifting from the existing runway up to the new runway. The existing runway will then be converted in a future package, which is the orange color, and we'll be coming back with a separate bid package to construct that in the future. The main element that we're constructing with this transition is the full pavement section. I know there were some questions in the past of what that's constructed of. This is a very detailed separation of that section. It shows everything from the sub-drainage system to separation fabrics and lights. But the core elements of the pavement section are, in purple, our sub-base or our partial drainage course material that really collects and conveys materials through the pavement section to our structural base, which is called a P209, which is shown in pink. That's what we're starting with in this next package, and then that transitions us up into the asphalt base course and surface course of the project, and we'll have a total of a 9-inch asphalt course on the pavement.
So last meeting.
Oh, and I'm sorry.
No engineers.
Interrupt me if there's any questions.
Yeah, so last meeting, no engineers at the meeting, so we had all the technical questions for me, remember?
Right.
So Jeremy is here as an engineer to answer technical questions about the runway construction.
And we got very technical at the last meeting.
It wasn't even very technical, just too technical for me.
I felt like it was very technical. So. this is really helpful. Any questions on this? Commissioner Clyden has a question.
Thank you for the information, Jeremy. On the bid package, are we like a materials plus or something like that? How do we and our vendors deal with changing materials costs?
So it is a fixed price bid. We are not allowed to index pricing. So the program bid will be fixed at the date of on Thursday. We set a bid price and it carries through the duration of the contract.
So. I mean, it's reasonable to say that some of the highest oil prices we've
cost
had,
oil
prices we've had in decades, and asphalt, I assume, is fairly intensive in that product. So we're going to have that fixed price even if material costs go down.
Yes, and that's a condition of the funding stream that we're tied to. It does not allow index pricing. I will say asphalt is a large component of what we're bidding, but of the mix, it's literally 5 to 6% of the total quantity. So we will see a reflected increase in prices is what's anticipated, but it's not going to be a 20% swing in the overall program. It's going to be a much more isolated to those bid items.
So what are the expensive factors in this project?
I'm sorry.
If you said asphalt is only 5% on this bid package, probably what is costing a lot of money?
Asphalt's 40 to 50% of the work. It's just the oil content of the actual asphalt is only about 5% of that, because it's not asphalt is primarily made of a blended aggregate.
Okay. Just glued together. Okay. Thank you.
It's the binder. Yep.
We're very grateful you're here.
If you go down to, I'm sorry.
So I'm very grateful you're here.
Yeah. So this slide illustrates the difference between the packages. So what's shown in green is what we're completing under the current project with Kelly Trucking. They're anticipated to be complete primarily with the sub-base course and handing off part of the project in August of this year. And then they'll be fully completed with their construction project in the spring of next year and hand over the remainder of the site. The next contractor, the bid that we're opening on Thursday, will start in August of this year in the center of the runway, and they will be constructing what's shown in that light blue color, which is completing the lighting, the surface courses, and the structural courses tied to the paving. And then this divides out, I'm sorry, well, go back one. This slide divides out how that fits into the grants that you've seen. So AIP 85 and 86, we've already executed and are extending those funds. Additionally, we have grants for 87 and 88, and 89, which we are getting ready to start expending with this new bid. And that completes the design, but it also pays for the FAA's components in their approach guidance systems, the NAVAIDs, and their reimbursable agreements that fund those.
So Jeremy, the work that you're talking about in light blue, that will be complete at the end of the end of 2028, and then we will begin transitioning the taxiway ALPA work. Is that right? Am I thinking about this correctly?
That's correct. We're anticipating we'll be bidding taxiway ALPA in 2028 so that we can begin conversion immediately after we shift the runway.
Wow. So the new runway and the bid documents that are out right now, the new runway is scheduled to open in October 2028? It will not open with the same number of connectors as what you see. It'll have just those three. And then, you know, and we'll bid out the work for the next year. I mean, the next year, 2029 is still going to be very intensive construction-wise.
Yeah, absolutely.
As we work on, you know, narrowing what is currently 1129 the taxiway width, and then getting those other connectors in.
Okay. And when we open in October of 28, can we take commercial airlines on that runway?
Yes.
Okay.
So, I mean, it is going to look like a runway. It needs to be a runway, and we need to make the other runway stop.
Yeah, runway can be on there.
Yeah. Yes. So, yep, and that's where it'll open. It just won't have that same operating environment from a pilot's perspective, where you have all of these connector taxiways, because, you know, right now we schedule a three-day closure, just only 3 days, which I'm extremely proud of the team for getting it down to that. To tie in, you have to close to actually tie in those three connectors you have.
So the runway is pretty close to 3 days.
Yeah. That's a big accomplishment.
Yeah.
So wonderful. The timeline continues to bump up, and it's exciting. Thanks for all your work, Jeremy, and the team. So because of it.
Appreciate all the support. With that, we're anticipating a few items to come in front of the board. So as we're opening the bid here this month, at the end of this week, we will be preparing updates for the board, and that will ultimately result in a construction contract, a Mead & Hunt construction administration, and a Garber program manager contract to go forward in June of this year. And then we are expecting an additional funding grant from the FAA in September at the end of their fiscal year.
Question. I'm sorry that I couldn't answer the questions last month. It's like I started to question everything I knew about the runway. I'm like, I think a question came up about concrete. I'm like, I don't think there's any concrete, but now I don't know. So I don't think there's concrete, just lots and lots and lots of aggregate. And we're not paving on dirt.
No, definitely not.
I think Rebecca.
Rebecca's not able to join us today. She did send over just some updates, which I can take for you.
Sure.
We kind of have on the left side just a reminder of, again, all the fun that Ben has been having. These are all pretty much his projects of Sporting Bridge, basement IT room, interior refresh, new signage inside, curbside chairlift, and the monument sign, which you guys got to see today. Currently kind of on deck is the air traffic control tower, and then we're calling it the level 2 amenity project. There has to be a better title for that, but we're working on the design to add that nursing mothers room, the pet relief area, and a new family restroom on the secure side, and really take it in some additional space there, relook at the exit lanes, as well as vertical transportation upgrades. The timing of which we're really trying to segregate those, because the transportation, vertical transportation will take a lot more time to get to, just from a procurement standpoint, as well as the design. So that's kind of what's all included in that design, but we're trying to break that up so we can move as quickly as possible on certain elements.
And as a reminder too, that level two amenity project, we build the nursing mother's room in the Haverly area. That's when we will put in place the exit lane technology. So there'll be three doors, basically, if you've been through an airport that has that, where the doors automatically open and they close behind you to prevent anyone from coming into the secure area through those. And that will eliminate the need to have someone monitor the exit lane. And that exit lane will relocate. So really, you know, that clear wall of stanchions that you see currently along kind of the exit corridor once you're through the doors and where the queuing for TSA is, that will become a physical wall. And then the exit lane technology will be installed between the new nursing mother's room and the security checkpoint. And so, you know, we'll be absorbing all of that space in the secure area. But just want, we kind of have to parse them out because the funding for them is different. That X-Lane technology is not eligible for any grant funding. So we'll have to cash fund that. And so it just thought of a little bit separately. They all work together.
And then we do have just a few images. I'm thinking most of you probably saw this driving in today, but if you didn't get a chance to see it, this is just that new monument sign that went in last week, I think. And then air traffic control tower, as you guys know, this has been a little bit of a challenging project in just coordinating all of the different groups, but we are starting to make some progress in coordinating, getting lifts out and everything else to starting with kind of the roof and the railing project here. So we are still anticipating completing that mid-summer. It is on track right now, so just kind of still in the kickoff phase. Ben, anything you want to add on the tower?
No, we should be starting around March 23rd, so hoping to be done for Memorial Day. There are going to be some loose ends that go into the following months, but majority of it should be done by Memorial Day.
Ben and the construction team have done a nice job timing most of the construction and the different elements in the mild weather season in preparation for
It's the goal that way. So we're replacing the two roof units up there. We also have the air handler that takes the cool air from the chiller. So we want to take one of those offline at a time so we have some sort of relief for the controllers.
Yeah, absolutely. Since it is the first week of March and it's supposed to be in the 7th.
Yeah. And on that note, too, I don't know if all of the board members have been to the tower. Everyone who's Red Dog Star because they always request the tour. They know when they read that book because that's what they want to see at the airport first.
There's actually not an apartment in the actual tower.
No, and you cannot see the self-serve fuel thing because that's what it's always. That's the question. I have not read the book, but that's the question I always ask.
There's a movie coming out.
Costco in the book.
But I did want to extend that to any commissioners and everyone who go over there. You know, you can just reach out to me and I'm happy to coordinate the visit. It's pretty cool to get to go up there. It works way better because it's a very small group because it's active, right? The guys are working and we don't want to distract them or annoy them too much. So, but just reach out to me if you'd like to go over there because it's the best view of the airport. I mean, it's a really cool view if nothing else. So.
Quick question regarding some of the updates. Obviously, in that upper area where the controllers are at, there's, I assume, some work that's going to be done. Are we going to have to come up, be offline at any point?
We're doing all night work.
Okay.
And so it's part of why the project has taken a while to plan it, because we want all the work to happen at night. So even like the roofing is happening at night, all of that. So our tower is open 6 a.m. to 10 p.m., and so we'll start construction at 10, we'll be done at 6. There are some areas like that lower walk, that construction they can do during the day or decompleting. But we're working with the controllers too, because we don't want to pretend to know about their world. We want to make sure that we're not impacting things that we just don't think about too. So really proud of coordination. Good job, guys.
And then we just kind of spoke about this. This is a high level image, which is really hard to see, but this was, you know, in our approval last month. But just to remind everyone, this is in that secure area, the family restroom. This is where the current exit door exists today. This is the relocated exit door right next to that nursing mothers and pet relief area. So they will come around here. There will be a corridor on the inside. And then this works with that future expansion. As the hold room is planned to expand this way, those don't have to move. Passengers will just be able to access that from a different area. So these are all still very high level renderings, but in that design phase right now. So hopefully we'll have some better updates on timelines and when we expect to bring actual construction contracts to you guys for approval. Once we get a little further along in the design, we just did our kickoff meeting this last week. So. I think that's it for projects. Dylan has a quick update unless you guys have other questions on projects.
I was just going to comment to Ben that the second escalator, two is one and one is none, so I'm excited about that.
Yeah, you and me both.
Yeah, right, as the stormwater drainage guys say, I think the escalators are coming with them. You know, there's a saying, solution is a solution to pollution. I'm like, solution is a solution to escalators, too.
Dylan, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. So it looks like I've got 24 minutes. I'm just kidding. Take about 5 minutes of your time here. Lindy, thank you. You point out, hey, let's talk about what the triennial is, right? I know there's some newer members on the board since we did our last one. So what is the triennial? The triennial is just what it sounds like. Every 3 years, any airport that services airlines, so 139, is required by FAA regulations to test its emergency plan to the fullest extent or multiple or mass casualty incident. Typically, what you need to model is your largest commercial service aircraft with a mass casualty incident specific to that, and then it also is tied to your ARC index on how many people that needs to be. But at its most bare bones, that is what a triennial is and what's required of an airport. Some pictures up there, the one on the left, that's actually Den's last triennial. I was able to travel to that one and observe out on the airfield. I think Ben and Cameron went with me on that one too, and they went to their EOC. The one on the right is Eagles, and a briefing that I attended for that. One of my favorite things is actually to travel around and observe other airports' triennials and see how they do it. So if you wanted to go to the next slide, the biggest challenge with a triennial is getting everybody to participate. And when I say everybody, I mean our mutual agencies. And we have a great relationship with our mutual aid, namely the fire department, the police department, with the city of Grand Junction, Mesa County Emergency Services, the sheriff's office, all of our local hospitals, the FBI, the FAA, the TSA, the NTSB, our PIOs. We have a very mature PIO program here in the Valley, and also outside agencies. So just to bring you up to date, we've already kicked off our planning meetings for our triennial. It'll be May 6th, and that's on the next slide. You don't need to go there just yet, but something we're kind of excited for with planning this one is we actually already have involvement with Garfield County as well. Their coroner came out with our latest meeting. They want to see how we do it so they can observe. We already have a lot of interest from Palisade and Lower Valley Fire Department as well to participate with the fire department. Real world scenario that would call for a lot of resources, so they probably need to participate whether they wanted to or not. So we're really happy to see that. I always explain it that it's kind of an awkward thing, right? The airport has its own requirements to fulfill this, but we ask everybody to come in and play with us. So as a part of that, we want to make sure it's very valuable to them as well. And since our last triennial, we've been able to model a lot of great things offsite with some of the hospitals. And what DFD, there's some specific things that the FD especially wants to test this year with decontamination of patients and simulating that. So that's where we find a lot of value in this. Yes, the airport fulfills its requirements and is able to build a mature emergency plan, but these other entities get to come in and do something as well. CMU has a lot of plans potentially to bring in their nursing students to learn a lot about how these MCIs work and participate as volunteers. And the coroner as well. I'm pretty happy about this because last triennial they had some input about making the scene very realistic with using dead animal body parts to get the sights and smells. I'm happy to say that this year they still want to do it, but they just want to do it with rocks and label things. So from my perspective, I have to make sure that we don't have wildlife attractants on the airport. So if we're putting chicken wings or whatever out there to simulate that, We're not doing that this go around. So these are pictures from our last triennial on the left there and on the right. And then if you want to go to the next slide, I should have warned Angela I had that GIF ready to go last time.
I just gave him more time.
So that was the active firefighting situation with our local ARF team and the initial response for last year's triennial, which was 3 years ago. Linda, you also played a major part in that. Appreciate that with the public information side of that. So May 6th is what we're planning to do. Right now we do know it'll be 9 a.m. start time. More and more details are coming together as we coordinate everybody and what their priorities are for it. So we don't have a specific plan just yet. Also trying to not be super public with it, so that way we can kind of have the element of surprise for the participants. And a lot of the mutual agency leadership, as you get them together and the gears start turning, they start thinking about what they might be able to simulate. So there might be a few more injections into the final scenario. Also for everybody here as well, we will have an observation theater nearby at a tent for you to observe, should you be interested. We'll coordinate the times on that a little bit later on because we'll have safety briefings ahead of time. We typically do that about an hour ahead. So I'll coordinate with Victoria just to make sure that we have the communication to you for day of. And I don't really have much more to go off of that. I said I would be at 5 minutes, and I am at 5 minutes. But I wanted to just show to you what it is we do, kind of a one-on-one on the triennial. I'm excited for it. And also, it's not just a value to us, but it's a value to the whole valley. So happy to answer any questions you may have.
I'll just comment. I mean, I think the level of coordination that Dylan and his team put on between every emergency responder in this community and beyond is phenomenal. I mean, they had makeup artists there painting wounds on potential victims, right? So they really are emulating, like, where are we going to stage bodies? How are we going to handle passengers or something, incoming and outgoing? And they do play worst case, but I will say, you'll see fire from the interstate at the airport, and they also do a great job of handling that. So I don't think you had one complaint or call of concern to dispatch. I mean, it's just a wonderful, you do a wonderful job with your team of executing it. It's really fascinating to watch.
Thank you.
Yeah. Any questions?
What you do?
I will keep the location private, but it is not on 422. I can answer that. So it'll be a different location.
The airport will remain operational throughout it. Like, we don't
yes.
impact.
Good point. It will not impact the main runway or 422 this go around, so the airport will be fully operational.
And pilots are notified as well because we recognize that for a passenger who's flying to the airport, if they see fire, that
yes.
can feel scary.
You did a really good job. Any other comments or questions?
Yeah, we'll get a hold put on the calendars and we'll make sure it's clear that it's optional, but that way, in case anyone wants to come out and view, or, I mean, if you're retired hypothetically and have time and want to, you know, get to come down and see this really cool event. And that's where too, like, if you know you want to bring other people, just coordinate through Victoria, I think works best. But we well
were here last time.
Yeah.
Too.
Oh yeah, they host the media. I mean, the media is a really important element of this also, the PIO element and then the reporters and the media.
Kayla, it'll be your first. That's really fun. The most fun thing you do all year.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I had one question all the way back, Angela, when you were getting your report, and I wrote it down, and then I failed to ask it. Breeze, they put their flights back in, they are growing. Are they happy with performance?
Yeah, things are looking really good. Okay. So, kind of, you probably recently saw an article in the Sentinel by Sentinel staff, so you might have added 12 words. Is that how it works? It's equally divided among 12
words. I remember 12 words.
Okay. But the Air Service Alliance put out a press release just announcing that, you know, the Breeze service is performing really well. We're really excited too about the Breeze through service to Orange County for the summer. I am so excited that there's, you know, 5 times a week you have a really easy, affordable way to get to Orange County. That's just that area is an important area for us in both directions. So people come here to visit from there, and certainly we like to go there and do all things Southern California. So thanks for asking that. It's performing well.
I'm thrilled to hear that. To keep it, we need to perform well.
Yes, exactly. Low-cost carrier service, they don't charge a lot per seat, so the planes need to be pretty full, and people need to spend money in order for it to be successful.
And they're nimble. I mean, they can come in and out of markets really quickly, as we've seen with the whole, I mean, I think we've had everyone except Sun Country and Spirit here in my time here. And so you want to keep them, yeah, for offer a really nice product. But it's definitely, they respond to the demand.
Everyone book a trip.
Yeah.
Before spring break. Okay, there's only one other thing I just want to chat about. It's really quickly. We are going to go into executive session next board meeting. We're going to do it before the board meeting to get you out for your board that you chair at 1:15 on time. And I think that's it. Okay, and you also have this in front of you. Please fill out this for the area. All right, may I get a motion to adjourn?
Adjourn.
Thank you. Second. All right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right. You're adjourned.
You don't fill it out. You just get what you get. You don't throw it. And then McAllister is going to have a good doctor. Ask me how I know. Do you like mustard? See, I'm not a mustard person.
Goodbye. Dr. Lee,
too.
I'm not a mustard person.
So typically,
I was like, I hate Cody Davis on the phone.
I'm also trying to figure out how to incorporate that fire.